This episode of Football 301, it is the NFC West preview. Definitely not the NFC worst preview. Super fun division to break down with my guy, Mr. Forverts, Charles McDonald, who joins me to preview the Rams, Cardinals, Seahawks, and 49ers in what should be a wide open and competitive looking division. We also break down the Terry McLaurin extension news and one thing we learned from week three of the preseason. Very fun show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. Great show for you today. We continue our division previews, the last week of division previews, because week one is next week in the NFL. Week one of college, and we got a little taste of week zero of college, but week one of the NFL is next week. Last week of division previews, we have the NFC West today, AFC West later this week. And to help me do that, to help me bring it home before we have real tangible games to react to, is my guy, Charles McDonald, who I just saw in Las Vegas. Glad you made it home safely. Great to see you. Hope all is well. Hope you got 1 ounce of sleep, 1 minute of sleep before you started recording with me. But how you doing today, Chuck?
Oh, I'm doing good. I actually got lucky because some of our friends who are with us in Las Vegas know, I thought that this show was yesterday. So my original flight that I scheduled for was for out of 3:30 yesterday. And I was able to get on standby for the 9 a.m. flight yesterday morning. So I got home last night around 7 p.m. Eastern time. But the flight that I was originally going to be on got delayed until 7 p.m. Pacific time. So I would have been like landing around 3 a.m. if I had stayed on that flight. Oh. So I'm thanking the heavens that I got lucky enough to get on that 9 a.m. flight, because I might have had to cancel today if not.
and you still had some issues anyways after you landed, right? Because it took two hours for you guys to deploy. This is what everyone wants to hear about travel issues, but it seems to happen to our crew a lot.
Maybe some things changed this year that are causing some travel issues. I'm not sure. But we got stuck on the plane for 2 hours trying to deplane because there were two other planes that were stuck at gates that we couldn't get to, and there weren't enough mechanics to actually fix the plane. So,
Perfect. Yeah,
we got stuck. They wouldn't let us get any more food or water either, which is like, man, we're there for 2 hours. I can't get another cup of water. Come on, Delta.
Yeah. It's not fair. No, I know. And you came from Vegas. You had to play some slots to get that free water. You know, you got to gamble a little bit to get from free stuff. I know it's on the plane, but a little bit. No, it was great seeing it. We had a great time doing a bunch of shows here at the Venetian. Me, you, Matt, all the fancy guys, Justin Boone, Scott, Scotty Pie. I'm sure he loves that. But all the guys, it was such a Scott's great. All of it was great. Ben also got some great stuff. We had plenty of shows. We did live Q&As from the Venetian. It was a great time. So thank you to everyone for helping out with that, setting that up, because we had some great questions in the QA as well. I met your brother and your dad as well. So that was fun for me.
Yes, they're out there too. Everybody.
Did not meet the sister, but the dad and brother did meet that.
No.
she opted out of the sports book.
their flight was early, and I guess my dad has more stamina than her, so she opted to stay in instead of coming out.
Vegas speed's different. You learn that they pump oxygen in the casinos. But also, you know, we had that great stuff this weekend through the Venetian, but make sure to check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network that is now getting going. Our brand new streaming TV channel, Yahoo Sports Network, is available to stream on leading fast services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv. You can catch all of the shows on your phone or your browser. So make sure to check out the Yahoo Sports Network, rolling now. Also rolling, the NFL, because it never stops rolling. Even when we were like, oh yeah, we got preseason games, we're going to take a deep breath, right? Nope. Terry McLaurin, a little quick breaking news, signs with the Washington Commanders, 3-year and $96 million extension. The holdout, the hold in, it's over. All those questions, all those opinions of what this offense might look like without Scary Terry. I think we all assumed that this would get done. He's kind of been Mr. Commander, whether for good or for bad. He's been Mr. Commander for the last few years. So figured a hardworking guy, a guy coming off his best season as a pro who has great chemistry with the quarterback, literally has 100 QBR with the quarterback when they enter the red zone, according to Bill Barnwell. He's back with the Commanders, which should help a lot with this offense. anything, any opinions, any impact, anything of note with Terry signing back with the Commanders? Or is it kind of like, all right, we can just ignore those little topic ideas for the last month or two?
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, that's how I feel more. We can move on because if you listen to the show, you've listened to it over the past month or so, we've talked about this with Harmon, where coming into the season without Terry was not really an option when you looked at the rest of their receiver room. So I'm glad that they got this done. It was so much fun watching Jaden and Terry, have the season they had together. And I think especially when you're a team that's trying to continue the success of a young quarterback, why not bring his favorite target who's still playing well and it's not really going to impact your ability to pay said quarterback at any point. So makes sense. Move on. You don't have to worry about Noah Brown being wide receiver one.
Yeah, and it's not like a 7-year deal, 3 years extension. Right. I know he's nearing 30 or almost 30, but you're still getting him kind of like in the little 29, 30, 31 curve. Should be great, should age okay. And also Terry has a game that I actually think is going to age well because he does dirty work stuff. Mm-hmm. He's good with his ball in his hands. He's good in contested catches situations as well. It's not just speed or just one, athletic trait. So I actually think he'll age better than maybe, another guy that signed older, DK Metcalf. DK's not that old. Yeah. But other receivers that signed a little bit in this age range, I think Terry will age better than like a Tyreek or something of that sort. Yeah. Matt hinted at this too. We talked a ton about it. Just can't see this offense functioning without him. This offense, I know it's the horizontal air raid stuff, but it thrives with outside weapons and outside guys that can win vertically and win in contested catches. Terry does that great. Jane Daniels has great chemistry and great confidence in Terry. It seemed like it was inevitable because it's like, who else you got to play on the outside? And honestly, this team has a lot of aspirations. They don't sign and bring in all those old guys unless they think they're making a push. So might as well just bring Terry right in there. All right. Also, before we get to the division previews, week 3 of the preseason wrapped up this weekend. We are done with the preseason. Had a mix of starters, way backups, a mix of starters and backups, and guys that get cut the next day. And people realize that guys they are about to get cut still play in the week 3 of the preseason. That's not some grand conspiracy. But I'd like to do this after each week of the preseason. What's one thing you learned from this weekend's, the last weekend of preseason games, Charles?
Oh, man. It's funny because I was milling around my hotel room this past weekend on Saturday because I had a little more free time during the day, and I was going to go down and go to the casino and play some games. But then my phone started blowing up for our friend John Shipley, who covers the Jaguars, talking about you have got to turn on this Dolphins-Jaguars game, because basically the Dolphins first team offense and first team defense was kind of getting punked by guys who were just trying to make the Jaguars roster. The Jaguars had 39 players inactive for their preseason finale. So obviously that means anyone who was going to be any semblance of a factor in the regular season was not playing in this game. And they, for the first half of the first quarter, they gave it to the Dolphins. The Dolphins had 6 yards of their first six plays, three and outs, and the Jaguars backups were able to convert second and long and third and longs against their starting defense, which is like, whoa, this is getting into a little bit of a scary territory when you're talking about guys who are going to be on the field next week when they open up their season in week one are really struggling against guys who have really mostly have no shot to make the Jaguars roster at that point. Because if you're talking about 39 guys are inactive, that means you're fighting for like the last, 15 to 20 spots if you include practice squad seats. Mm-hmm. So most of those guys who are playing on that field are not going to be NFL players coming week time. That's really, really disturbing, I think, if you're a Dolphins fan. And it's kind of like a continuation of where we were with the Bengals defense when they got punked by the Commanders second team offense, where it's like, hey, you don't want to extrapolate too much from preseason all the time. But when your starters are getting beat by other teams' backups and third stringers, that's got to be a little bit concerning. And I think it kind of rolls into all the negative feelings that we felt about the Dolphins this offseason, including like that legendary practice between the Lions and the Dolphins, to where it seemed like they were just massacring them on the field. And I'm surprised they had enough players to suit up for any game following that. But Dolphins, you got to be feeling a little bit of a red alert going into the season after how they played this weekend.
Yeah, whenever you see, I know there's some teams that had the ones out there for a series, two series. and maybe even three series, it felt like with the Dolphins playing their starters playing three series, it was like, no, no, you got us into this mess. Get us out of this mess. It wasn't like, right. Oh, this is great. And this is a good time. We really want to try some stuff. It was like, we can't go three and out. We can't be two against sacked twice, even though we throw the ball in 2 seconds or less. Like it just was very sloppy. It felt sloppy. Even one of my, when, you know, for this little segment, like my first idea was too, was like, you know, Ollie Gordon has emerged from this backfield, and I was going to use that as a point going, like, that's not a great thing, because that was not, you know, because I'd much rather say Achane looks great, or the passing game looks really consistent. And there are glimpses of some of their young guys, you know, playing okay, like Patrick Paul, their left tackle, I do like, and he's had some nice moments and everything. But just other players, I'm just like, this is what we're rolling into the season with. And Achane's banged up. Jalen Wright's banged up. He was inconsistent in preseason as well. And so now it's a 6th-round rookie who is interesting, Ollie Gordon, but it's like, that's all I got feeling decent about this whole entire team, or at least offense. Malik Washington is another guy that stood out this preseason, one of the receivers. But again, these are all these backups and auxiliary role players, not the starters with the ones with the Dolphins looking amazing. So it just, right. Yeah, we've been pretty sour on the Dolphins, you know, interesting defensive line, interesting players across the team. But overall, it's just, this preseason hasn't changed my feelings whatsoever. This has not been like, oh man, they look really polished right now. Like, okay, actually maybe they're really picking up. It just seems just disjointed. That's maybe my best word for the Dolphins.
Yeah, they look thin. I mean, because they look thin. Especially up front, where I like Patrick Paul too. I think we were both fans of him in the draft last year. But how many times have we said offensive line? It's a sum of your parts position, and they were still in a spot where they had to sweat like an Austin Jackson injury at right tackle. I mean, how many years do you have to see that before you know it's time to move on, or at least time to have him as like at most your swing tackle. And that's just kind of the spot where they find themselves. And enough's been said about the cornerback room. And we saw that again this past weekend where, you know, the Jaguars receivers who are fighting to make the rosters are out there breaking tackles against your starting DBs. It's not a good sign for the regular season.
It's not. I mean, it might surprise us, but it's just the taste isn't good right now. I'll move on to mine. Mine was just kind of more of a broad, several day two drafted rookie pass catchers stood out. And really, this was an excuse to talk about one particular guy. That was Isaac Tesla. You know, as opposed to Tesla. I've learned there's just a little change in the little pronunciation there. But from Arkansas, 3rd-round pick, consensus graded, including myself, I looked at him as an early 4th-round interesting project you can maybe take and get something out. He played primarily in slot. He was a transfer from Hillsdale, I believe, in college, a small school. Transfers to Arkansas, gets used in the slot. Just a big athletic guy. Okay, he has a really good Senior Bowl. All right, we'll see what we got. Enter Brad Holmes, who trades up for him. Significant trade capital to go up and get this guy. All right. And our guy, Matt Harmon, was like, hey, he's interesting. He's interesting. Maybe check him out. I did. This preseason, though, way more polish than I was expecting. They have him lining up on the outside, which is different than maybe I was expecting. I thought they would kind of maybe, oh God, we're going to show my tweet where I spelled pleasant incorrectly. And I tell you this, Isaac Tesla is real. Isn't it funny how that works? The ones that always with a typo are the ones that like blow up. Yeah, but I said, I tweeted this weekend, Isaac Tesla is real. And this is before the week 3 game. Such a pleasant surprise because he's way more polished than I was expecting. I still think he's a little raw, but good hands, strong, moves. He's just one of those guys that moves differently. Even when he gets pressed, he's just stacking corners right away because he's so strong and athletic. He flies out of route breaks. Like, he just looks more like a contributor this season. Not saying he's gonna be amazing 1,000 yards as a rookie, but he looks like he can be on the field as a rookie, which is way ahead of schedule to me. And not only just as a, I thought, envision the power slot or something interesting, move him around. No, a true X. They're asking him to do the hard stuff, and he's actually can answer. He can play on the ball, and he's making plays. This isn't just me extrapolating one or two plays where he has some glimpses. It's like he was productive in the preseason. I know it's preseason, but hey, this is good. So I'm just really, really liking what I see, and I think I'm more. I was interested in him, but I thought it would be maybe in year 2 or 3 where we're doing one of these preview shows. I'm like, hey, make sure you check out Isaac Tesla. But really, what. He's coming along earlier than expected, so I wanted to give him a shout-out for the Lions. 3rd-round pick, Harold Fannin Jr., your guy, another 3rd-round pick, tight end from the Browns. split him out, caught a nice touchdown to with Joe Flacco, the ones.
Joe Flacco, first really team, nice. Yeah,
they love him. So this is what I've gathered. The Browns coaches love Fannin. They want him as a contributor in this offense, more than just a role player. They want him taking a lot of snaps. They're going to probably be in a lot of two tight ends with Njoku, and they're going to just use him as a all over the field guy, just like he was at Bowling Green. So he looks more, it looks more real than interesting, which that's why I wanted to give him a shout. It's like, oh no, you're going to be on the field and playing and doing cool stuff, not just a package player guy. So I wanted to make sure I talked about him because I know that's your kind of, well, one of your little pet projects of this draft class. So
the Hernandez comp.
I was trying to avoid it, but yes, the Aaron Hernandez comp. Yes, on field only. And then the last guy is Terrence Ferguson, tight end from the Rams, second round pick. Just had a couple snaps. He was battled some injuries. Now finally playing this preseason game. Looks explosive. Was burning DBs on slot fades. So that's another guy I wanted to shout out because I know we'll talk a little bit about the Rams and Terrence Ferguson a bit on this show. So shout out to some day two pass catchers across the league. And your Tesla guy, was a good Harold call. Fannin.
Yeah.
I watched
the clips. I was like, where did that come from? the Tesla clips. I was like, who is it? Where is this in Arkansas?
him and Pat Bryan, Matt and I have talked most about because he kept going like, you're going to like Pat Bryan. I'm like, I do, you know, late third, early fourth. But like, I like him as a pro even more now with the Broncos. But same with Tesla. He was like, he's interesting. And yeah, he's very interesting. I'm very intrigued by Isaac Tesla, which is a great, great name. All right, we are going to take our first break, and then we are going to come back and start out with our division preview of the NFC West. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. Let's move it on over to the NFC West, the Eye of Sauron, moving over here. What I think is one of the most interesting divisions in the NFL. I honestly, even as I'm talking right now, I'm not sure how to handicap this division because I'm interested in all four teams. And I think all four teams, I want to start out with this, are valid playoff teams. I really do think have a chance at least if things break right. So, and I'm not crazy here. There are a lot of over under win totals in the 8 range, 8.5, 9.5, 10.5 range. I think there's a lot of good units. There's decent quarterbacks. There's good run games. There's interesting defense. It's just a very cool division. But we're going to start. This is alphabetical order. This was not me saying to start off with this team. But we're going to start with the Arizona Cardinals, who went 8-9 last year, had some really cool stretches where they looked like they were maybe getting over the hump and really maybe a sneaky playoff team, tapered off in the second half of the year. But their offense, still Kyler Murray, quarterback, still Drew Petzing, offensive coordinator, new offensive line coach, which I'll talk about, but returning a lot of the same faces up front, skill position-wise, a lot of continuity on this side of the ball. So Charles, when you're looking at this Arizona Cardinals offense that was pretty good last year, not overwhelming, but pretty good, what's grabbed your attention? What are you focusing on this year?
Maybe it's a little bit too default position, but I just want to see what Marvin Harrison Jr. has coming into this season. I'm not down on the guy. Like, I still think he could end up being like a sturdy wide receiver one for this offense. And maybe it's just going to take a little bit longer for him than we thought. But I still thought last year he had a pretty good rookie year. They had some moments where it was really on fire. You could see like some of the separation ability, the contested catch ability, but probably just want to see a little bit more consistency from him. I don't know. Like I've seen people say, oh, it was already like a mistake that they took him over Neighbors and BTJ, and maybe those guys do end up being better players than him down the road, but I'm still not really selling the idea that he could be a strong wide receiver one for this team for the long term. I still think there's a lot of talent there. He's obviously a guy that's still growing into his body, as we've seen with some of the workout clips this offseason, and how he's able to put on some muscle. You know, is it ever going to be maybe the most consistent 1-2 combo because Kyler Murray's your quarterback? I'm not sure, but and this offense obviously does could try to spread the ball around a decent bit with guys like Trey McBride and Michael Wilson out there this year. But I still think that there's a lot of untapped potential here with Marvin Harrison Jr. And I'm not selling my stock here just yet. I think a big year could be in store for him. There's still a lot of growing up, I think, to do with guys in general in this offense. I mean, you still have young guys like Paris Johnson, Trey McBride, still a younger player, Trey Benson, needs to be a factor running back this year. So they're still growing together. And I think that Harrison could be in store for a big year still. I'm not ready to give up on that one yet.
No, I someone asked me a month or two ago, might have been pre-baby two, that they're, it was just on Twitter, and they just go, are you still high on Marvin Harrison Jr.? And I wanted to answer that, but also like, because that last year's receiver group, I think everyone realizes this, was pretty sick. And I said, I'm high on Marvin Harrison Jr. In fact, I'm still high on pretty much everybody that got drafted in the first couple of rounds. Like, I'm not really selling that many of those guys, and I'm including Marvin. I think, too, is his game. You know, he got drafted really high, not just in real life, but also fantasy. And that's going to impact some things, too. Cardinals don't have a ton of fans. I'm sorry, Cardinals fans. You're not one of the national fan bases. But also on top of it, it's an offense that's slow. It's a slow, methodical offense. I mean, this is by design. They are fourth in plays per drive. They're dead last in drives per game. You know, they're fourth in 4+ yards gained, but they're not very high in explosive plays. And so that's what I think, there's a disconnect that there's always going to be some artificial lowered ceiling statistically. So everyone goes, oh man, Marvin Harrison Jr., only like 1,180 yards, yada, yada. But then when you look at rate stats, and how many, you know, per route and all that, and he looks a lot better. I think that's just how this offense is going to go, at least just maybe the national brain on it. But I really just looked, just looking at the stats of this team. So this offense last year, 11th in weighted DVOA and overall DVOA. Okay. Above average to good, you know, that range. 4th in suplex rate, which is stat, you know, success rate, explosive play rate, good. 9th in EPA per play. Okay. 1st in explosive runs. 4th in rushing success rate. 8th in passing success rate. Like, these are good underlying numbers. 21st in explosive pass rate, 26th in air yards per target, 16th in yak per completion. So this is tied to Marvin Harrison Jr., but it's just tied to the personnel of this team. This team can get explosive runs with James Conner, not so much Trey Benson yet, and then Kyler sprinkled in just a little bit. And then on top of it, they can get a very efficient run game because of all that in the offensive line play, and because the receivers are big, they can catch underneath. Trey McBride's great in the intermediate areas underneath. But this is kind of like, this is my highlight of this offense, but my negative of this offense is where the explosive pass is coming from. That's not Marvin Harrison Jr.'s game. You know, he's going to be a monster of efficiency underneath, intermediate. Him and Kyler Murray really worked on back shoulders last year. It was not good. But you mentioned this, Marvin Harrison Jr. looks yokes. He looks like he put on 10, 15 pounds of muscle, and he's snatching that football. Like, these guys aren't deaf. Like, these guys have pride and what they want to do, or deaf and blind, I should say. Like, they know what they need to work on if they want to become great. Everything about Marvin Harrison Jr. is that he's wired to be great. So, of course, he's like, well, I didn't catch those. Well, guess what? Watch this. Biceps, triceps, shoulders. Like, wait till you see this stuff. So to me, I don't think the explosive plays, even though Kyler throws a beautiful deep ball, I think the explosive plays in this offense will be those back shoulders. It'll be more 20-yard gains, dig routes, stuff over the middle. But that's the thing, is Kyler's got to get more comfortable throwing that. So I still think Kyler showed a lot more last year than people give him credit for. I think he's always going to be a little bit inconsistent, just how he plays. He's not the biggest guy, and how he wants to play is as a pocket quarterback. But this preseason, he was trying to throw some stuff over the middle. They moved Marvin Harrison Jr. some condensed splits, let him run in breakers. That's where yak comes from. Catches over the middle where a guy can catch and run. And Kyler's not great at it, but I think they're working at it. And they don't have to be one of the best. They don't have to be a Shanahan offense where everything's over the middle, over the middle, over the middle. But you just got to be average. You know, you just got to be able to, you know, the defenses can't just ignore that area and just guard the outside. That's why Kyler and Marvin are so good on out routes, because Kyler's really good at it and Marvin's pretty good at every route. So it's a methodical passing that needs to find explosives. I think Kyler is, then they're trying to work at it, but the answers have to come from their personnel. So really, it's like, I have nothing to add. I still think it's a good offense. It's just that they need to find explosives. Otherwise, it's going to start feeling tight, 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 tight. And that's just a really hard way to win.
They haven't had a chance to be pretty good on offense this year, even if it looks a little inconsistent. I mean, even the run game, like, I'm pretty fascinated in, because they had so many good moments with, like, James Conner last year, and it feels like he's kind of almost turned. I think he's turned to a better player than he was in Pittsburgh since he's been in Arizona. And even I'm still not out on Trey Benson. I like some of the pieces they have up front. Like, there's room for this offense to be good. I guess we just got to see it. You know, you just got to see it. Yeah. But man, if they can just string together a consistent season, I think this could be a top 10 offense pretty comfortably. It's just going to be how consistent can you stay, you know?
Yeah. It's a high floor offense to me. It's just more about,
yeah,
all right, how do you pop it open? How do you break the game open? Or you have to be methodical. Yeah, and I think they're there. And then last little stat here, they were bottom 10 in condensed splits last year, according to Next Gen Stats. That's where I want to see a little bit more. They kind of got a little bit isolated. And I you know, when they went to gun spread, it was very isolated on islands, which you can make it work. But I think maybe just a little more formational variety. They can throw that in there and that'll really help them out. But they got good tight ends. I mentioned Trey McBride. He's what, top three tight end, got great chemistry with Kyler. They got backups behind him. That are contributors. This team runs 13 personnel with three tight ends more than anybody. They have an identity, to a Tip Ryman and Elijah Higgins. Like, they have an identity. It's just, it's the next step. They just have to take that next step, and I think they could do it. All right, defense, though. Another interesting unit. more interesting than good for the last previous year and a half, and then the second half of last year really picked up. Traded for Baron Browning. They ended up top 10 in EPA per play. But, success rate wasn't great, but very, was making big plays in situations, got turnovers, timely turnovers. But you could start seeing some realness to this defense, some growth to this defense as last year went along. But this Cardinals defense, Charles, what is grabbing your attention with them?
The front seven, I think, is what I'm most interested in here, because they've gotten to the point now where they've put resources into the front seven. You need to start seeing a little bit more return than you've gotten so far. Walter Nolan, first round pick this year, he's been hurt with the calf update or the calf injury. So I'm not sure. Of course, the guy that was kind of the key, the last perfect piece for the other stuff they had acquired has been hurt. Because I think when you look at this defense, it's like, okay, we got Calais Campbell back again. And even at, I don't know how he's doing it, but he's still like a quality player to have as a part of your defensive line rotation. Just a physical run stuffer. And every once in a while, maybe you can get some pass rush stuff out of him. You drafted Darius Robinson in the first round last year, another big guy who you're probably expecting a little bit more out of this year. Dalvin Thompson, another big guy who they added this year. And now it's time to get to like the speed part. All right, so we got Josh Sweat. That's going to come off the edge. We're hoping that at some point we can get something from BJ Ojulari. But Walter Nolan, that was going to be your interior guy that was going to bring the heat. So hope he can get going, because they kind of need, I think, his style of like boom bust play for lack of a better term on the interior, because they don't have too many guys that are going to get that penetration by themselves. But he's someone that, with those guys like working in tandem with them, where they can take on some of the heavier blocks and allow him to do what he does best and go chase stuff, that would be a nice rotation. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. Like, when they can get back to full health on defensive line, what does that look like? Because I still think they're probably going to need a big year from those guys up front just to maximize what is possible for this defense. Because the secondary looks okay. I'm still a little worried about the cornerback room. I don't know what to think of Will Johnson at this point. I mean, there's been so many injuries. I know I was really high on him coming to the draft. I still think at his best, he's a great player, but it hasn't been the smoothest offseason for him coming into this. So I think that defensive line, that front seven, is really going to be key for them this year.
Yeah. Will Johnson, I think they're encouraged, but it's, rookie encouraged.
It took a little bit to get it signed too. You never know.
That was like even last year, that was the injury stuff. That last year was Quinyon Mitchell going to the Eagles. It was like, yeah, I'm high on him, but like, I'm not going to like, yes, he's a first round pick corner, but I'm not like, well, a lot of other positions, I'm like, okay, he's going to be at least okay. It's like, it's a rookie corner. Like, if you think if you're saying good play off a rookie corner, like, you have more faith in it. Even if the highest guys I've ever been on, like, I'm just like, you never know how these guys play the first year. You said the front seven, which is valid because they have really cool scheme, but they just need guys, like you said, to win one-on-one. So the same discussion we have with like the Vikings, kind of like a Diet Coke version of the Vikings, funky, but they need guys that can just win one-on-one. So yeah, they add all those new names. Zaven Collins still has some nice moments in this defense. They move him around all the place. But the DB room is pretty cool. And I think maybe deserves a little more love. Buda Baker, still super fun, unique player, all pro, kind of the keystone player of this defense, all the movement stuff they use with him. And that's another thing. Nick Rawls, this defense coordinator, their whole defensive scheme is an answer to Shanahan offenses and late motion. That's why they use Buda, even though he was, and also it was because he was their only player worth using this way. That's why they kind of let him do this third safety stuff where he rotates late, is because of the late motion. He can now answer to the motion. So I think in their division, they have a Shanahan, a Kubiak, and McVay, all Shanahan offenses they have to defend. Yeah, that's a good answer, I think. Garrett Williams, I think, is an outstanding player and kind of their, I just use keystone for Buda Baker, but this is their Swiss Army knife. But another important player to what they want to do. He just does a little bit of everything, especially from the slot, but he can do truly anything in this defense. Jalen Thompson is solid, versatile. Max Melton has had flashes as a kind of an athletic rookie. So he's playing so well that the Packers have his brother and they're like, "What? Hey, Bo, you want to try corner?
Bo.
Your brother's pretty good at it. Do you want to try it?" That's how good Max looked at it. But yeah, like you said, Will Johnson is the wild card. If Will Johnson is average, wow, this is a really good back five. And that could do some cool stuff. Inside linebacker's a little worrisome, but that's not the key point of this defense because they do other things on the back end. But yeah, I had him as my number 10 defense.
Melton, I'm not quite there on yet. Yeah.
I see the vision with him, but that's, again, it's like, me how too. Many of those I guys work out? 1 out of 5?
Well, no, but I still think he could work out, but it's like, man, Melton plus rookie Will Johnson, where I don't know what he's running even right now. So
I get it.
We'll see. But like, the interior three, Baker, Williams, and Thompson, that's strong. Like, that's really strong. It's just the outside stuff I get a little bit concerned about.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I think I would not want to run man coverage with this unit, especially with the linebackers too. But that's why they don't. They just run a bunch of zone and funky.
Yeah.
So it's great. We'll move on to breakout player for the Cardinals. Some interesting names here, but who did you go with, Charles?
Breakout name for the Cardinals. I don't know if this like counts, but I went with Paris Johnson Jr.
Just that's my breakout player. I actually thought you were going to say Marvin Harrison Jr. So,
I was holding off
on talking about Paris Johnson until this point. So yeah, let's talk about
this guy is. I don't know what they're feeding those dudes at Ohio State because they keep putting out like these like absolutely jacked 320-pound offensive tackles that can do everything that you want. And I think Paris Johnson has got like sky high potential to still turn into one of the best tackles in the league. But like, how do you go from Paris Johnson to Josh Simmons? And like, where are you finding these guys and what are you putting in their bodies
right,
where they can turn out like this? But I think he's at the point where like they could use him as a weapon, especially if they're going to try to keep getting this run game going and try to get like some of these Trey Benson explosives popping. Like there's still a lot of untapped potential up there on the offensive line. I think that he's a guy that's just going to keep getting better. And it sounds kind of ridiculous when you start thinking about how many guys go into the NFL draft and how many guys play, but he just kind of seems like a guy that's like too talented to fail to me, Paris Johnson. So I'm all the way in on him. I love his tape. You have to love the tools, and he hit the ground running and just continues to get better than me.
Yep. Basically the same thing for me. Paris Johnson Jr. He's an attitude setter too. Like total leader type that wants to cleat people in the run game, but then also like he's celebrating other his teammate touchdowns, running down the field, one of those types of guys. He was, when they drafted him, I was kind of like, okay, this regime, remember they did some trades on draft day, with the Texans moving up, they moved back, they went back up to get Johnson, and I was kind of like, okay, you guys are building through the trenches, you're not kind of chasing anything else, chasing the dragon somewhere else. But like you said, he has the longest arms. He has such long arms. His techniques keeps getting better. He's good against the run, or good blocking the run, really good, I would even say, and good against the pass or blocking in the pass. And now his old offensive line coach from Ohio State, Justin Fry, is now his old line coach at Arizona, which I also, if I want to like give one last little maybe question, or I don't know how to answer it, is him being the offensive line coach and Clayton Adams going to the Cowboys. I think it'll be okay, but he's never coached in the NFL. And offensive line coaches that never, ever coached or played in the NFL, It's always a little scary for me. So I will just say, I'm going to use that in my back pocket in case things do go sour and say, that's the reason right there. Because I do have to mention that, but Paris Johnson Jr. is the truth.
I'll give another one. I haven't been following Cardinals like roster projections recently. So if this guy gets cut, Mulligan. But Dante Stills, he was a 6th-round pick from West Virginia for them a couple years ago. I think like in the time that Walter Nolan misses, that could be like a little plug-in maybe that they try, because he's a little undersized, but at times, man, he can get up the field going. So the other run pluggers that they've added this year, he's a guy maybe that could benefit from that while Walter Nolan tries like to that. Get healthy. Dante Stills, yeah.
Like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, Garrett Williams would be my other one. I always want to say Garrett Wilson. Garrett Williams would be my other one. He's Pro Bowl quality. He really is already a Pro Bowl quality player. This defense not going to shine that. All right, over under win total, Arizona Cardinals. It's at 8.5. What you going with, Chuck?
I think I'm going to go over. I think 9-10 wins sounds about right for this team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Which is going to be very competitive in the NFC. They face the 6th easiest schedule as well. So also just got to mention that. I am going over for this team. How far over? I'll determine. But over 8.5 is what I'm going with. All right, move on. We'll go westward in the NFC West, as far west as we can go. Going to the Rams, Los Angeles Rams, who were 10-7 last year, have an offense that we were pretty bullish on about a month ago. But I'm sure that'll be a more interesting conversation in a second. I even have him as a potential top 5 offense. But no, return Sean McVay, return Mike LaFleur, return offensive coordinator, return a bunch of their offensive linemen. Although they have Shelton Coleman at center. We'll see about that. Added Devontae Adams at receiver. Have Matthew Stafford with, some fused discs pretty soon. But this Rams offense, Charles, you had them as your ninth best offense when we did the top 10 offense show. Again, I had them as 5th. How are you feeling about them now? What are you making of this Rams situation?
Oh man. It's tough. It's tough because Stafford is in such a,
how many games
are
we getting?
Such a bad spot right now. You know, like, because if Stafford's hurt, I guess it is nice to have someone like Jimmy Garoppolo as your backup. That's not a bad spot to be in as far as backup quarterbacks go, but still you're not going to reach your potential unless Stafford plays all 17 games, which I don't know because it's not only that he's dealing with this back injury where, you know, he's having disc problems, aggravated disc. And when you have something like that, like you can feel good one day and you can feel terrible one day, but you're probably never going to be like where you physically need to be on a day-to-day basis to get through a 17 game season, especially when you look at, you know, we just talked about the Cardinals. They added juice up front, trying to get after the quarterback. Yep. The 49ers, they have guys like Nick Bosa and Michael Williams, and they're trying to get after the quarterback too. The Seahawks, they've got a tough front, and they're going to be getting after the quarterback this year. So it's tough, especially in a world where Alaric Jackson, your starting left tackle, who they signed to extension, he's been dealing with blood clots in his leg. And that's like so far out of my medical jurisdiction that I don't know what that could possibly look like this year. Like, what's the ramp up period for getting back from that? So there's some critical questions, I think. But even when you have those problems, you just kind of want to get rosy-eyed and look at the rest of the offense, because, man, Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua with Kyron Williams is like, as your running back, that's a really good core to have on your offense. And, you know, we still think Devontae Adams is a good player. Obviously, Puka Nacua is one of the best wide receivers in the league. So if those guys can just stay upright in terms of Jackson and Stafford, I still think there's room for them to hit this ceiling as a top 10 offense. But we're just dealing with so much that we can't foresee yet. You know, like, once Stafford actually gets out there and gets to play on a regular season field, how does that look? How like mobile is he? How is he able to kind of dodge defenders in the pocket and stay upright and keep plays alive? It hasn't been like a super duper strength of him as he's gotten older, but if that takes like another nosedive with just how, you know, rigorous back injuries can be, man, they might fall apart on offense a little bit this year, because so much relies on him just being able to fire the ball and stand tall in the pocket. I'm a little worried now. A lot more worried than I was a month ago, I'll say that.
Agreed. Yeah, I was kind of waving away. Like, yeah, this is what the Rams do. They always have this BS leading up, and then the week before the season, it's all fine. And then we're like, oh, what? Like, I mean, you remember Puka Nacua came back last year? It was like sneaky.
Yeah.
It was, I think it was Thursday night against the Vikings, and all of a sudden they like announced it Thursday morning. Like, yeah, he's playing tonight. Guess what? Ha ha. And I'm just like, whoa, 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 whoa.
whoa.
I was gauging with you guys. Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's like that five ranking is if Stafford's playing at least 16 games this season, you know, or 15, you know, even if he misses one or two. That is just that I thought this offensive formula, I thought they figured it out. It's a hyper efficient run game. They get no explosives on the ground. So that the offense would to get the explosive plays they needed through the air, much like the discussion with the Cardinals. But they can do it because they have Stafford. And even without not like amazing, amazing downfield talent, you know, Tutu Atwell can spread some things out. Puka Nacua can kind of house some things as well. You know, it's not like a bunch of burners out there, but they were able to get explosive plays because Stafford's willing to whip the ball down the field. And that's why their big weaknesses last year was beating man coverage. Got Davante Adams, who was a top 10, top 12 receiver against man even last year, and some shoddy offenses and with older age. And I think his game ages well anyways, and especially here where he slotted down a role. It was all kind of shaping up to me. They have also like little mini answers to maybe injuries at other spots, which is like something that's hindered this offense before. Okay, we had Davante Adams. Jordan Whittington is a nice player who can back up every spot, kind of do the dirty work. All right, so we have depth at receiver. We even have like a little bit of depth at offensive line. Alaric Jackson is terrifying. You already stated that. So that's where some concerns come. But at tight end, they got Tyler Higbee, Colby Parkinson. Now they got Terrence Ferguson, who I already mentioned earlier in the show, another explosive play weapon. Tight end looks they can get into if they have an injury at receiver. Like now at receiver or running back, Kyren Williams, they had Blake Corum last year. They drafted Jarquez Hunter in the fourth round this year. They have depth at running back. So it's like, oh, wow, you're doing all the things I want you to do. And then Matthew Stafford's got a bum back. And then I'm like, and then the left tackle's got blood clots. Like Christian Barmore for the Patriots had blood clots last year and missed the entire year. So that's my data point. You know, like, okay, that's my recent data point I can go. The blood clots are scary. Like, I'm with you. Medical stuff. I know ACLs and Achilles and that. Blood clots to me, I know it's just case by case. So that's a left tackle. That's, and then you're starting DJ Humphries, who looked absolutely god awful last year with the Chiefs. Maybe a whole preseason helps. I know it's just, it's scary. It's scary. I mean, I'm going to still be an optimist and still think it's going to be a great run game. It's still going to be an explosive passing game. And I think these guys are, I like the tight end stuff that they're doing and adding different bodies. I think they're going to have a lot of cool schematic answers this year. They're going to be one of the teams that's going to get under center and drop back, which I'll talk about with the 49ers as well. Just all come down to a 37-year-old's back. And if it's all good and maybe they've just been really super cautious and we're fine, I mean, wow, this could be a really cool offense, but I know the Jimmy G experience. So I know the ceiling of that offense and this offense needs explosive passes and Jimmy G is not usually the one to provide that. But now let's go to the defense who, one of these defenses that did better in my mind than when I looked at the stats and I was like, oh, and I was looking at playoff stats last year, you know, like before we did our preview shows and I was like, yeah, you guys weren't as good as I'm remembering. I maybe it's the pass rush was really doing a lot for me. But last year, I mean, they were bottom five in just about everything. Bottom seven, success rate, EPA, suplex, which I look at, explosive passes allowed. I think Chris Shula, their defense coordinator, does a fantastic job. He's really, really interesting to me as far as scheme stuff. But to me, it's if the pass rush doesn't get home, hold on to your hats, hold on to your butts of how well this defense can do. But what about you when you look at this defense, Chuck? Do you think they have a strength to lean on? How far can they carry them? Or do you think, say Stafford's healthy the whole year. Okay, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
Is this defense enough for them to make a run in the playoffs, or are they just a one-and-done type of team?
I think they could make it to maybe like a championship game, potentially, if Stafford's healthy.
So win a playoff game.
And he's
to win a playoff game. It's like make a playoffs plus one win, and then Super Bowl contender. You know, those are like the three tiers of playoff teams to me. Super Bowl contender. So, okay.
If if Stafford is healthy in this world where, you know, you don't feel the physical taxation of standing back there and actually like playing quarterback for 35 dropbacks a game,
on purpose,
he's fine. that's the thing. Like I say this as a known quarterback hater. That stuff is, it's taxing. Even if you're not like a guy that's running back or a lot back there, you're just to drop back that much and throw the ball and, you know, stay focused. Like, it is very physically taxing over the course of a season.
So
like, it's going to be tough for him to get through that. But if he's healthy and they can get leads, that's going to be most important for this defense, being able to get a lead.
Yes.
Because they have, like, the pass rush situation, I think, should be pretty good for them this year, or has potential to be better than it was last year. Jared Verse, you know, I think he's already set it and forget it type of player. Even Braden Fisk is someone who has potential. We know about like Byron Young is like your third guy. You're not in a bad spot. Is it like an overwhelming pass rush? Probably not. But if Jared Verse can take another step, then you're looking at a unit that could at least get after some people when the offense is able to score. And they might need that because, whoa, I don't know about this. I don't know about this back seven, buddy. I mean, when I was looking at the depth chart this morning, I was like, Nate Landman starting? Like, I've seen Nate Landman play for the Falcons, and that was someone that they couldn't get out of there fast enough after they realized, because he had kind of had like the whirl of moment for this, like this new regime where it's like, oh, in a pinch, like you were okay for us. What if you started? Oh, no. Yeah, that can't happen.
We actually need talent there.
You actually need some talent there. I just get worried about this back seven. Like if their offense struggles and they're in these games where, you know, you're scoring like 20, 24 points, this defense could be in danger, because I don't really know who in the back seven you're supposed to trust just yet. I like the idea of Cam Curl and Cameron Kitchens, I think. But those guys still have to prove it. And then at DB, I think they really, really need an infusion of talent there. Like if they have a chance, like even next year, to spend one of those first round picks on a DB, I think that should probably be one of the first things they do, because the backfield has gotten pretty thin for them.
Yeah, the Cams at safety are kind of big play hunters, both of them, especially Cameron Kitchens.
Right.
Which,
yeah.
If you get pressure, is awesome, because then it could be like, oh, quarterback's got rid of the ball. Oh, I can jump this. But this defense, it all comes down, because you just nailed it. It's like, I don't trust the back end. They're a couple interesting guys, but it's almost by design that they're going to go like, yeah, we're trying to make big plays. We're not trying to hold up. Like, again, you have to pick and choose your investments on an NFL team. And this is where they kind of seem to not ever, they never invest in inside linebacker. But just seems interesting as far as the body types they have. And even just statistically, like if the quarterback does get time, they get shredded. And it's not just eye test, it's apparent when you watch it. But even just look at the stats, any extended pass play last year, 4 more seconds, the Rams defense was 32nd in success rate, dead last. They were 32nd in yards per attempt allowed on 4 more, 9.2 yards. The league average is 6.5. Throws under 14 or 4 seconds, 16th in success rate. So that's it. If the pass rush gets home, they're okay, because they jump stuff. They do some funky stuff on the back end to make the quarterbacks hold onto the ball that extra half second or 1 second. But if they can read it out, or if the pass rush doesn't get there, oh, they're getting shredded. And I think that's just what this whole season's going to be. They'll have games where they feels like a NBA or NBA basketball defense, you know, pressing, where they get after a team and, oh my God, they just won by 21 because they got a pick six and another turnover, and the Rams run game just held onto the ball for 10 minutes and boom, game's over. But this defense does cool stuff scheme wise. It's almost the same discussion as maybe the Cardinals the last couple of years, but they have a much better pass rush already. But like you said, Verse, I think, was top five in all pressure rates last year. He didn't have a ton of sacks. He had a decent amount of sacks, but he'll get there. He's a pocket pusher. So you get other guys that create pressure, that's just going to create a whole bunch. Kobe Turner is a good player. Puna Ford is a funky good player. You know, he's short, but he's so strong. It's more funky defense, but I've become bearish on him as I've kind of waited as time has gone on. It's funny, I'm so high on this team 2 months ago, and I'm kind of like, have teetered down a little bit, and as the more I've looked at it, so this team is just going to feel like a team that goes on runs. I think they'll blow a couple other teams out of the water, even good teams, and I think there's others where they'll just get overwhelmed when they face a talented team. But again, wide open NFC. I do have one Nate Landman note from years ago. He has a sister named Ocean. That's my note. That's my Ocean Dayton Landman. I still remember that. Ocean Landman. That's his sister's name. I think she played it somewhere in college of sports, but yeah. Breakout player. I was actually curious where you went with this one. Breakout player for the Rams for you for this year.
I guess I went with Jared Verse for mine, too, because I think there's still a lot of room there. Because I think when you said high pressure rate, lower sack guy, that's what I was looking up. And one of the first names that came to mind, like from that archetype, was Khalil Mack when he had his rookie year for the Raiders, where it was getting pressures, but he wasn't quite getting home. But you still saw like the whole picture, like eventually what it could be. I think like there's one of these years, maybe it's not this year, but it's going to be soon where he just goes nuclear. Because if you can do that as a rookie, even if you were an older guy coming in, that still shows that there's a lot of untapped potential there. So I still think he's going to be a high pressure guy. I think he's going to start getting home more a little bit this year. And hopefully one of these DBs can pan out a little bit, just so you have a second more or half second more to get home. Because other than that, I'm not really too sure where all the production is going to come from. It just seems like they're putting their chips, like even on defensive line, they're putting their chips on the non Jared Verse guys, like to a bunch of like lower, not guys who have a high ton of potential, but like high floor, low ceiling guys. But you still need someone to come in and be like the guy that blows the roof off. So Jared Verse is going to be my breakout player, because I think he can have a monster year.
Yeah, I think he's really good player. He's one of those, he's a pocket pusher. So the sack numbers are just like Khalil was. So like, he'll always be a little bit lower sack than pressure. Will Anderson's the same way, where it's like the great, good against a run, good to push the pocket, got a couple moves, but you need one other guy to get pressure to like really take advantage of it. Otherwise it's just really frustrating when you get slow pocket pushers and that's like, sack him. Somebody win and sack him,
please. But no,
please. Oh, I know. And it's I've gone back and forth about what you need, but I've learned you need a little mix. You need some guys that gap shoot, and you guys that push the pocket. And you just want to make it funky on the quarterback. But I'm with you. Verse is just a good player. He's so freaking strong. My breakout player. This is almost by default, and this is a football 301 breakout player. This is a Nate football 301 breakout player. Omar Spites. Inside linebacker, LA Rams, just because by default, because I wanted to find someone a little bit more niche. I didn't want to go with a rookie in Ferguson. And I think he's going to be down the road. Omar Spites, interesting player last year, undrafted free agent. I mentioned, made a joke that the Rams do not invest in linebacker because they think they can just find guys day three or later. I think they did find a decent one in Omar. Do not think he's a potential Pro Bowl or anything, but I think he can turn into a nice, solid to pretty good starter. And if this is real and he actually is real, that helps. That helps his team, because now they can actually just focus on the back end and investing in that down the road. So Omar Spites, because look at the offense. It's like, who am I going to say? Davante Adams, Kyron Williams, you just got paid. Like, Puka Nacua breakout player. Yeah, I know. So it's like Terrence Ferguson, but I try to avoid rookies, and then offensive line, they got all vets too. So, should I say Willie Lampkin, their little 5'6" offensive lineman from North Carolina / Coastal Carolina. He's cool. He actually is cool. Want to give him a shout out, but I don't know. It's a funny team. It's really changed my mind a lot how I felt about the Rams the last 6 months. So their over under win total right now is at 9.5. Charles, what are you going to go with?
Oh man, this is so tough. I think I'm trying to think about where I am at the other two teams in the division. So I think, what you say, 9.5? I think I'll go under 9-8. I think I'm really worried about that offense. I'm just worried about Stafford, man.
Like,
I'm sitting here after a tough travel day with similar injury as Stafford. I'm like, oh man, like my back's killing me. I can't even imagine having to go run away from Nick Bosa
or just other NFL
players. Look, you sit on that plane for 6 hours. You're going to be hurt when you get up. I promise you, man. So I'm just worried about that. Yeah,
I get it. If you asked me a month ago, I would have been easy over, and I think now I'm under. Like, that was just crazy. how I felt about this team. But this is why preseason, this is why you got to look at actually how the depth charts are breaking down and who's actually starting to step up, who's actually hurt. I'm going under, but I'm not like all the way out on this team. I'm just hedging about with Stafford's health. Like, I don't want my quarterback to be laying in the corner like late career Larry Bird, you know, having to lay on his stomach with pads everywhere because he can't stand up or sit down because his back is wrecked. So that's it. It's just a hedge against that. And just the passing defense is a little bit more worrisome as I've looked at it, even if I really, really, really like what Chris Shula does. Just hedging against that a little bit. So still one of the most interesting teams in the NFL. But we are going to take our next break and we'll come back to wrap up the NFC West preview. All right, we are back with our NFC West preview. We're going to move on to what has been a juggernaut, but took a step back last year, amount a season from hell. That is the San Francisco 49ers, the Santa Clara 49ers, hosts of this year's Super Bowl, 6-11 last year. You know, just a really rough year for the 49ers. I mean, off field, on field, it was when your players get shot going into the season. I'm not really liking the vibes there.
The vibes.
But this off, Kyle Shanahan is still the main play caller. There's another Kubiak on this staff. We kind of know what we're getting here with this scheme and the strengths and weaknesses, though. But Charles, this 49ers team that still has a bunch of injured players, especially at the skill position spots, what are you focusing on with the offense?
I want to be more panicked. I feel like I should be more panicked than I am. But you know, even when you look at some of their numbers last year, because they had similar issues last year. You know, Brandon Ayuk got hurt halfway through the season, or a little earlier than halfway through the season, I should say. So they were around him for a good chunk. Christian McCaffrey, I mean, when he came back, I'm kind of stunned that fantasy guys are all over this thing, because he did not look like the same player at all to me when he got back from his injury that caused him to miss like the good early portion of the season, because it just didn't look like he had the same explosion. Like the skill level looked okay, but like actually breaking out on like some of these long runs and getting explosive chunks, it felt, looked like it was a little harder for them. But then you look at where they were last year, they were still 11th in success rate on offense. They were 5th in success rate on dropbacks, 4th in percentage of plays that go for a first down or a touchdown, 8th in explosive play percentage, 7th in red zone success rate. I mean, Kyle Shanahan had built the machine, and I understand where maybe casual fans look at this and say, oh, you know, Kyle Shanahan's overhyped. You know, he can't win the Super Bowl. He can't get to the big one. But like, this is kind of what Super Bowl level coaches do. When guys are out and they're hurt, you can still credibly say that you have a top 10 offense. And we're sitting here talking about, well, I don't even know how good the quarterback is. So I can't find myself getting too down on this. We like some of the pieces here already. Still, Ricky Pearsall looks like he can step up and be a fine receiver. Been big fans of Juwan Jennings. George Kittle. I get concerned about the offensive line, but man, I've felt that way for several years now. And they still keep turning out top 10 offenses. So I don't know.
That's the thing, is most other teams, I'm like, oh man, this offensive line, and I always just throw it out. And I know that's not fair, but he's already proved it. Kyle Shanahan has proved that it doesn't matter who's up front as long as they got Trent Williams, you know, like, but it's, I mean, there's three NPCs on that offensive line and I'm fine with it. You know, Dominic Pooney's real as long as he's healthy. Another guy, he has knee sprain, but I think he's playing week one. So we're good. But yeah, that's how I am with this team. I know other teams are probably like, what? You just chalk it up. It's like, yeah. Because no matter what happens, as long as a couple of those starters are out there, the quarterback and maybe the offensive line or maybe a back or one skill position guy, this offense keeps churning. But great point about CMC, because I'm with you. He faces more injuries than not, usually, and he's a running back getting up there. Last year, I'm just even looking at max speed from Next Gen Stats. His highest in the game was 17.4 miles an hour. The other games, the max speed was 16.3, 16.7, 16.1. So frame of reference, like 20 miles an hour is like elite, excellent. You know, 19 is pretty damn good. You're hoping an 18 is kind of like the good level. The year before that, 20.9, 20, 19.4, 19.3, 19.3, 18.9. These are the max speeds that he hits in every game. there's only two games that use below 17. And last year, it was a majority of them. So like what you're saying, just again, eye test, it's like, yeah, his max speed wasn't all the way there. And there's going to be circumstances where you're able to get max speed with the types of runs and all that. Yeah. But just like a one quick little glimpse at the data, that's a downward trend. you know, that's not exactly what you want. They traded for Brian Robinson, who I would describe, and I mean this complimentary and derogatory, is a simple runner. He's a simple runner. It's blocked there. He's going to get it. And I think that's why coaches like him. Maybe not Washington.
Yeah.
But they do. And so if CMC's out, I think Shanahan went through a whole thing where it's like, all right, Isaac Grando is a shot play guy at running back. He has no vision. He's only big plays or not. If CMC gets hurt, we can't live through another season of that, of just like, oh my God, he's missing all the easy gains. So they got a guy that can just stay on schedule. And I think that's what they want from that backup role. But I've become more of a believer in Brock Purdy over the years. I think that's why they've invested so much in a receiver, because I think Shanahan was trying to evolve this offense into more of a straight drop back, let it roll. You know, we have a great run game, but then we can just drop back and rip it. And I think they'll do that a little bit more. Get under center and straight drop back. No play action, no nothing. Just let it read out and let all these players go to work. They just have to be healthy. and then we can finally see the vision. But like Juwan Jennings is awesome if he's out there. I know that he has injury stuff and contract stuff. Truly one of my favorite players in the NFL. Can play inside out, can block and do everything. Ayuk, if he's out there, has turned into a great receiver. That guy was looked at as a top 10 guy until he held out and then got hurt last year. That was only a year ago. And then Ricky Pearsall, who I know our guy Matt Harmon's high on. I'm high on based on how he's looked. So it's like, I get it why they want to do that. Having said all that, did like their little tight end signing and Luke Farrell from the Jacks. Shanahan tried to sign Brock Wright from the Lions, and the Lions matched the contract, which like nobody was expecting last year. So I think Shanahan's wanted this blocking bruiser tight end to open up Kittle. Hey, if our receivers are hurt, we can just go two tight ends. Juszczyk doesn't need to do so much because he's getting older too. I think he's like 34. 33-34. So that's like a little sneaky signing that this 49ers team made that I like to kind of just, you know, help cushion themselves from injuries and kind of keep the personnel groups open. So yeah, Luke Farrell. This is my main bullet point for my 49ers offense breakdown that I had as a number 7 in my top 10 rankings. It's Shanahan, man. If Purdy's healthy, I mean, and you got Mac Jones, who's looking comfortable in the offense. Like, you know, completed that narrative. That story arc with Mac Jones to Kyle Shanahan. But yeah, the defense though, you know, make me a little antsy. Robert Saleh comes back to this team, to this franchise that got him the Jets job in the first place. That fantastic, was it 2019 year? God, it feels so long ago. But he got that, you know, ton of energy. He's usually a quarters guy, kind of simplistic defense, wants his guys to run and rip. But you still got Fred Warner, still got Nick Bosa, still got Demonador Lenore, who I think is a Pro Bowl caliber corner, got paid as well. But the thing is, it's when you look away from those guys, Charles, maybe start getting a little antsy. So what are you thinking about this 49ers defense? How are you stacking them up?
I wanted to be more excited about this than I was, but this to me, it seems like a boom bust defense for at least this year. I mean, Michael Williams, a guy that we both liked, he hasn't played this preseason.
Tempering it.
And that's been that was the knock on him, you know, the injuries. They kept kind of piling up in Georgia, and I saw he was I think he's back practicing today, so. Yep. You know, this is Monday after preseason end, so maybe he'll be on track to play for week one, but I don't know what it looks like. He hasn't played at all. You know, I don't really have any frame of reference for where he's going to be versus NFL offensive linemen, and that's going to be a kind of a big wild card. And we were, you know, I had some concern about like where they had spent these picks on defense, because they had two all-juice team players, in Upton Stout and Nick Martin, that they drafted on day two of the draft, where we mostly got like late day three or priority UDFA grades on those guys from the people that we asked. And they kind of look like that this preseason. I mean, especially Nick Martin. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he's going to be a guy that gets into the rotation a lot this year. And his competition was like Dee Winters, a former sixth round pick who is also undersized of himself, like coming from TCU. And then Upton Stout is like a 5'8", 185 pound nickelback. So this is like a small front seven. And you at least wanted to say like, well, okay, yeah, we're going small at nickel, we're going small at linebacker, yeah. But we'll at least spent on the defensive line, right? Right. So we got Michael Williams, hasn't played. Alfred Collins, he has not looked good, all that good to me.
I don't think preseason. I've heard kind of negative things, and that might be not fair to him, but at least the last I checked in, which is about a week ago, when I was like, all right, well, how are you doing, Collins? I have not, it was not rosy, at least when I was looking at it.
It didn't look all that pretty to me. You know, I mean, I saw some of the same stuff where, you know, at Texas to me, where it's like, you're just a tick slow on a lot of this stuff.
He gets reached.
You're big.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're big and you're strong, but you're slow.
No.
Yeah. No. You cannot be getting reached out here. If you're not going to be rushing the passes like that, you can't be getting reached.
Can't be reached.
So,
it has to be impossible. I don't, if you get reached, you're dead. Yeah. You're useless.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't really know what these guys play out like, but I know that they're pretty much necessary for what success they may or may not have on defense this year. So right now, as it's patched together, like you still have some like assassins, right? You got Nick Bosa, you got Fred Warner. Yeah. Those guys are going to give you a high-ish floor, but I think they're missing some pieces to bring this to a complete defense. Probably looking more like next year, the year after, when this all comes together.
Like I'm way optimistic on the 49ers improving from last year, not winning. They're going to be better in six games. It's just like you said, it feels like this year is more like we'll be better. But like it's not a Super Bowl run team to me because of the defensive stuff more than anything. Even the offensive questions, it's more the defense I've looked at. Is you need good units on both sides to make a run. And that's why I agree with you. It's like one more season. I think next year I'm like, okay. And they sort out everybody, all the receivers. They figure out the hierarchy. We'll see how this kind of offensive changes work. You know, maybe it's a less true run game, more true pass game. We'll see how that works. But the defense is their biggest weakness has been stopping the run. I usually like to look at suplex rate or success rate, but just even EPA per rush. This was the 49ers ranks since 2019. So since they've kind of become a contending team, you know, that solid year I mentioned, 2019, they were ninth, 2020, ninth, 2021, first, 2022, second, 2023, 28th, 2024, 28th. They just, like, if you want to play this, it's not soft mentality, but softer defenses with a lot of zone, a lot of quarters, pretty easy for the quarterback to determine what you have and for their offense to determine what you have as far as run game wise, you need to stop the run from those looks because then you're just killing yourself on third down. You're just making it easy for offenses to matriculate down the field. So I think no matter what, that was like the big offense or defensive improvement for this team. And I got all giddy. I wouldn't shut up about Michael Williams for like 3 months. Every time we did like a little superlative show, I'm bringing up Michael Williams. Well, then he's hurt. So then it tempers me a little bit down. You mentioned the interior stuff. It's like, all right, who's plugging the run for these guys if they want to play those soft boxes? Fred Warner's amazing. Unbelievable. Are we trusting everyone around him to be also unbelievable? Like you need a really good slot, but we got Lenore on the outside now. He's phenomenal in the slot, but this defense for the last couple of years can never figure out how to have Lenore because he kind of shores up wherever their weaknesses is. And I would almost rather have him in the slot because of how this defense plays. And that's me, but they need him on the outside because they probably just don't trust everything. So it's just, and then even guys I'm optimistic about, Malik Mustafa, the headhunter they got from last year from Wake Forest, he's hurt. So, you know, just these where I thought their answers were coming from, they're all hurt or just not playing yet. And I just want to see this freaking pass rush with Nick Bosa, Bryce Huff, and Mykal Williams kicked inside. Just let me see it because I want to see a third nine where these guys are teeing off on some bad offensive lines. But they play a division with the Cardinals run game, who were second in rushing suplex rate last year, the Rams run game, who were 10th in rushing suplex rate last year, I believe top five in success rate. The Seahawks run game is going to be much better. We'll talk about them in a sec. All right. Are you guys going to be able to hold up against the run against all those games? They play, what other teams they play? The Saints with their bully ball offensive line. They play them early. They play the Bucks offensive line when Tristan Wirfs coming back from an injury. They play the Falcons run game. I know we have questions with the Falcons, but not that run game. Just, it's like that feels like it's going to be a thorn in their side if they just don't have a good game script on the you know, overall for their team. So yeah, again, this is another team. This feels like my Rams discussion with their whole team too, where it's like I was so much more optimistic about this, and now as I looked and time's going on, I'm just kind of like tempering myself and lowering kind of my expectations for this unit. All right, breakout player for the 49ers. This was a little tough for me because all the players I wanted to say were hurt. Malik Mustafa, Mykael Williams, and Dominic Pooney. So curious where you went with this category.
I still went injured guy. I went Pooney. I think he's nice. One of the guys that, like,
good.
When he gets healthy, he's got some real talent. He's got real talent, I think, to be a long-term starting guard. So, look, did I want to pick an injured player? No, but it's thin picking. The other one I was thinking was like maybe like Renardo Green, but I think I'm going to go with Pooney, the guard that they drafted in the third round recently.
I like that with Pooney. With Renardo Green. That's actually a great call too. I should have given him a little shout out. No, Pooney, really like him. Did not think he'd ever end up in the Shanahan offense. And I think that's what's so, I love when Shanahan gets like a burly ball guy, or, you know, just a barroom brawler type, and they're good. I just love that kind of mix mash of personnel. So great call with Pooney. Probably would have been mine if he was healthy.
He goes after one every once in a while, because he went after Joshua Garnett. Then they had Aaron Banks, yep. And now he's got Pooney. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Even in Washington, he had a guy, and I'm blanking on his name. Mykael came to the Falcons. I've told you a couple parts of this story, but their staff was like, hey, this is our ideal player at this position. This is our ideal player at this position. And he brought up some guard that the Commanders had, Washington had. And it was just the ugliest guard I've ever seen. Like, couldn't even, like, looked ugly in his stance, everything. And Mykael was trying to make a point, like, hey, it's not going to be all these like finesse, really athletic guys. Like, I can make these ugly ogres work too. And I wish I could remember the guy's name, because he's worthy of a shout out. I'm going to go with Ricky Pearsall almost by default, because receiver room injured, but also all the guys, other guys I want to mention have been injured right now. But I think he's a good player. I think that it was a good pick. He catches everything. I think he's got some real route running juice to him. I also think he's in an offense that's perfect for him. He's willing to go over the middle. He can play inside and out, at least to me. I know our guy Matt Harmon is super high on him. If he was on this show, it would probably be his breakout player. But yeah, Ricky Pearsall, good player. Someone I'm targeting in fantasy as well, just because of just what I think this offense is going to be this year. All right, over, under, win total. Vegas is very high on the 49ers. A lot of the underlying metrics are high on the 49ers. They face the easiest schedule in the NFL, at least as we sit right here on August 25th. That changes very quickly. Over under 10.5 wins, Charles. What do you think?
Under. I'm scared of his defense. I mean, even last year, they finished 29th in success rate per play on defense. I don't really know how they get out of that unless, like, Mykael Williams, which is possible, because we just haven't seen him play. He just has an outstanding rookie year. I think they're going to be pretty tough against the run again, but you have just enough where you probably flirt with like 8 or 9 wins.
Yep. I'm going under just because 10 wins is still under. You know, wins, 10
wins, like, is under. Yeah.
Still technically the under. Yeah, so I'm going under, but it's not like I'm totally out on this team. So I just want to kind of like talk out both sides of my mouth with that. But
it just getting through 11-6 and 12-5 range seems like a lot.
That's a little. I see this team as 9-8 or 10-7, and like a solid one. Maybe I just pictured this whole division like that. That's what's ruining it. I just want to end this, is that Charles and I are both high on Mykael Williams. And so what Charles said there is very true. If he's healthy and hits the ground running, then a lot of our conversation is kind of, okay, never mind. That's why I was high on him in the draft. That's why I was high on him with the philosophy of what the 49ers are going for, because I think he enters the league. Even, I know I haven't seen it yet in preseason either. He's going to be a plus run defender right away, and unlocks their pass rushing juice on third down. So that's why I think if he is healthy, does hit the ground running, it's a big if, that's going to really help find some answers for this defense. So just want to reiterate my Mykael Williams love for the 40th time this offseason. All right, ending, because it's alphabetical order, you know, even though I'm a Mariners fan, going with the Seattle Seahawks, who did win 10 games last year, 10-7. They missed the playoffs, which if you have told me before a season that they would miss the playoffs at 10-7, I would not have believed you, but that's how the NFC is. Same head coach and Mike McDonald, new offensive coordinator and Clint Kubiak, new quarterback and Sam Darnold, new God, what else they got? They got a lot of new stuff. They got a whole bunch of new offensive linemen. They got a new receiver three, new receiver two. They got a new tight end in the draft as well, and Elijah Arroyo. We're going to talk about all of that. What do you think, though, Charles, with the Seahawks offense? What is grabbing your attention? Are you a little higher on them maybe after their impressive preseason?
Yeah, after seeing it in action, I'm higher on the idea that this offensive line won't be a complete disaster this year, which I think does That's a fair. Lot for where you can
it's hard
where,
to be worse.
Where you can put, yeah, it's hard to be worse than they were last year. I feel like it would be irresponsible for me to say they obviously they have a good offensive line now, but I think they have one that's functional, especially when you look at where Zabel played or how Zabel played the first round pick from North Dakota State, like getting him next to Charles Cross for the long term. Like that's something it feels like you might be able to count on for the season, which is a lot more than you could say about where they were last season, or maybe even some of the feelings that I had about where they were coming into this offseason. So if they can be sturdier up front, like there's room for Kubiak to come in and have success in his first year as an offensive coordinator. I just don't know if they have enough to have like truly have a good offense, because I'm still not in on the idea that Cooper Kupp was something that this team needed. And then when you get past that, you know, if we're talking about Torrey Horton, he's a fifth round pick. I think we're high on him for the future, but you still have to think about like how much you're putting on his plate. Yeah, to the moon. Like he's a really promising player, bro. I've got him on a bunch of dynasty leagues. He was one of the stars of our, you know, dynasty, college football dynasty last year for the Colorado State user. But in real life, I still want to give him a runway to like be a fifth round pick, you know, for his rookie year. So I think for this year, I think all of this maybe comes out to be like an average offense, maybe slightly above average offense that has its moments, which is, and I mainly said because I feel a lot better about the offensive line than I did last year. And I think you could probably chalk a lot of that up to coaching. I mean, Ryan Grubb is back at Alabama. He's coaching with Kalen DeBoer again. So, you know, I think the fact that he didn't really get sniffed at for the NFL chance says a lot about where he was last year. So I think that's going to help a lot, but still just want to see a little bit more, maybe another offseason before I say, oh yeah, this offense is good. Cause I still kind of wanted to see outside of maybe a Kenneth Walker run, like where are the explosives on this offense really going to come from?
Mm-hmm. It's me, Seahawks optimist. That's I'll start this section off. No,
they should have had Geno for these guys.
It's me. I still got my Darnold chair, so I'm okay here. That's the thing. That's why it's been so complicated for me. And I think Matt even asked me this. He goes, "You're like one of the few people that's in both camps. Like I'm a Geno guy and a Darnold guy." So I'm just like, you know,
I don't hate Darnold. Looks. I just think I don't hate Darnold. I just wouldn't have swapped out Geno for him.
You always encapsulate him perfect. Like, you know what he is. Like, and I think that you're very fair with him. It's like, yeah, he has his highs, but he also has some of the worst lows you could possibly get. No, but it's starting. I think the offensive line is going to grab everyone's attention, even with a new quarterback and a new OC. And the early returns look really good. They got a vet offensive line coach and John Benton, who is Kubiak's guy. And I mean that Kubiak's plural, because it was his dad's guy in Houston. It was Shanahan's, Kyle's first offensive line coach in San Fran. He's his own guy. I mean, we're not shocked. They're going to run a ton of zone and do some other things. They got the fullback back there too, doing some cool stuff. But that's where I think the floor of this offense is even higher than maybe I expected. That's what a Shanahan Kubiak offense does. It's a big floor riser. You just need the quarterback and the weapons to lift the ceiling. But man, that offense looked good. Gray Zabel looked great in his first couple games. I was thinking Oluwatimi would take the center spot. It looks like Jalen Sundell is at center, and he looks great. Former undrafted free agent, I believe. But now I have some depth. Like, even though I watched the backups, Oluwatimi looks solid too, but Sundell looks good. So we got a nice little North Dakota State Bison at center and left guard, which not a lot of teams kind of trotting out a couple FCS guys. Right guard, it's been a battle, I believe, between Bradford and Christian Haynes, but both seem positive again. Avery Lucas looks healthy at right tackle. Cross is the only one missing. And before the season, he was the only guy I could trust. So again, this is some narrative scouting, some disco stew to the moon, you know, stock up. But I don't know. The floor looks high. I think they have actual talent there. And they actually have guys that know what they're doing. And everybody just is going to the right place over and over, right spot. This offensive line coach last year, I believe he's in Alabama too right now. He was never a pro guy. This is leans to a discussion from the Cardinals offensive line coach. It's like, you just don't know how these coaches are going to do. Is their stuff translate? Do they even know how to operate a protection scheme? For the Seahawks, it was absolutely not last year. This guy does, Ben does. He's been around for a long time. And I just think run game wise, even if Kenneth Walker's hurt, which is set your clock to it. He's already hurt. He's going to be hurt again sometime this year. I think Charbonnet looks great in this offense. Looks good at the very least and fits the offense. Their backup looks decent. George Halani. Again, this offense makes the most of average personnel and can really lift that floor. And I just think they have a little bit more juice. You mentioned Horton. I temper expectations. He's a receiver three at best. I like AJ Barner a ton. Spoilers for a different section. Yeah, I don't know. JSN, duh. I think he's going to get hyper-focused and get to move around because they use condensed splits and stuff. I think it was really conducive to how he plays. So, yeah, this is an offense that I was optimistically a couple months ago going like, they can maybe get to 18th, 16th, you know. And now I'm like, okay, I think maybe 16th, 17th, 18th is more the floor and they can maybe crack that, you know, 8, a 9, a 10 if things go right because of who they have. So, if you can't tell, I've come around a lot on this Seahawks team. I was pretty high on them going into this offseason process. And yeah, it's looked good. And I just, how I think they're building, it makes sense in my head. So, and I also, because I just don't think Darnold's as bad as most people think, that I think that's what helps as well too. And it's a good offense for him. Just don't make him make mistakes. Bootlegs, play action, third and fours. All right, we just take it out of Sam's hands. Just want to make him a couple big plays. That's where you can help out. He'll hit a couple big plays down the field. The defense though, I think pretty universal agreement here, The strength of this team and maybe potentially has a chance to be the best defense in the NFL, but at the very least, I think really safe to say top 10 defense. I would say safe to say top 5 defense almost. They're fourth in the second half of last year in defense suplex rate, eighth in weighted DVOA. And I think they are going to look even better this year, but Charles, what's exciting you about the Seahawks defense and do you think they have a shot to be the best in the game?
They do have a shot to be one of the best. They do have a shot to be the best defense in the league. I mean, we know that especially on that side of the ball can be a little bit fluid. But when you're looking at that, just look at this, like the collection of talent that they have. Like I know. The first thing I thought when I was looking at their depth chart is I would hate to be a running back against this front seven. Like they are bringing the absolute pain. Because even last year, once they started to get things together. In the back half of the season, they were really tough to run against. Leonard Williams breaking out, Byron Murphy looked good. And then they just added DeMarcus Lawrence to that. Got John Hankins, who I know is dealing with some stuff right now, but when he gets healthy, like that's just another guy you can rotate into stuff to run. Yep. And yeah, probably spoiling myself a little bit here of my breakout player pick, but their linebackers, Ernest Jones and Tyrese Knight, are really tough run defenders too in their own right. And then there's Devin Witherspoon in the nickel, who's not afraid to stick his nose in there and hit too. So like you're trying to run against this front. It's not going to be fun. Obviously, Mike McDonald's going to have him in the right spot. And I think it was encouraging that, you know, Mike McDonald did it again last year where you start off a little shaky. Maybe you're not as clean as you want to be. But then by the end of the season, they were an absolute machine. So coming into year two, where you're bringing back so many of the same players, I think they're probably going to get off to a fast start. And like I said, this run defense, I think, has a chance to be one of the best in the league, especially once John Hankins gets back. And that's like your third guy that can come and stuff the run. Byron Murphy is going to be, you know, another year better. And he's got some pass rush explosion on the inside. Leonard Williams had maybe one of the best seasons of his career last year.
The second half of the year.
No, seriously, like and even against the Jets, you know, he had the interception. Like he was really showing out last year. So I think this front really, really could be one of the best in the league. And then Witherspoon, even in coverage, you got Tariq Woolen, who is still, you know, one of the more exciting cornerbacks in the league. I can't say enough about this defense and the talent that they've acquired. They really just seem like they could have a really, really strong breakout season this year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I hinted at it, but I love just the front seven, the defensive line. Like, I love when there's just this many different types of bodies. like just, all right, we got a bruiser, we got a run plugger, we got a pocket pusher, we got the bendy guys on the outside. They got Nwosu and Boy Mafi. Like those guys are just sprinkled in as well. Yeah, but you mentioned Hankins as well. Derek Hall. Like these guys aren't even like starters, like technically, quote unquote. Like these guys are just rotational parts, but they have so many bodies to throw at offenses. And Mike McDonald, this is why he became kind of like, you know, the scheme guy's favorites and then watching on Twitter and everything, but also just, I mean, just looked at the box scores. That leap from year one to year two with the Ravens, which we've talked about before, it took time year one. Then year two, they just took a bigger leap. He's one of the best game planning defensive coaches. I would just say coaches, any position, any unit in the entire NFL. And it takes time to have comfort level to add on, to learn your personnel, who is good, who is bad. But now that they have that, man, these blitz looks, these pressure looks, the simulated stuff they do, it's going to look really cool. And even if he wants to rush straight, got some guys that can get after the passer or push the pocket or be boom bust like a Byron Murphy. I mean, you mentioned him, but I haven't even mentioned him yet. And he's great. Like he has already showed out. Yeah. He's a dynamic player. So they got guys that stop the run. Like they got beef against the run. DeMarcus Lawrence is what Mikel Williams is. That's what I'm hoping what DeMarcus Lawrence is what I'm hoping Mikel Williams becomes. Just excellent against the run and like a good pass defender. Even if he's hurt, it's like they have enough to cushion him against other stuff. So, and then the back end, you mentioned Witherspoon, who it could be a national breakout player this year. He's awesome. What, just a really run, really, really fun and smart football player. Reek Woolen, you mentioned Julian Love, another dynamic player in this type of defense, really unlocks him. So, yeah, it's a defense I was high on. I've only gotten higher as the last couple of weeks and months have gone along since last time we maybe focused on them, but could be a really, really special unit, like you said. We had them all in our top six for our top 10 defenses. So, again, we're not saying anything crazy here. I think Shield Kapadium has the number one defense when he did his rankings as well from the Ringer. It's not. And it's one that I'm like, damn, I wish I had it. I wish I had that take. Because now I've really, really gone like, man, these guys are going to bash some heads in. And it's going to be pretty cool. Yeah. They open up with the 49ers, which should be a lot of fun. Then they go at Pittsburgh. That could be a nice little Haas fight. And then host the Saints, which could be another little sneaky Haas fight. All right, breakout player for the Seahawks. Who do you got, Chuck?
I'm going with Tyrese Knight, linebacker. He's a fourth-round pick last year. And it really, it was the game that they played at Arizona last year where they had some plays where they were just beating guys up front. And just the way that, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to be like an elite coverage linebacker, but I love the way he fits the run. Like just, he is, shift, square up, hit. And it's just the routine of it over and over and over again.
He's always holding strafe.
I fell in love.
Was it left trigger or right trigger?
Yes,
left
always, trigger. Always holding left trigger. He's always holding strafe. And as soon as the ball declares, he is downhill and he's hitting and no fear. Like those are the players that you need to have one of the best run defenses in the league. And it's kind of like, I guess it's like the perfect mid-round backer, you know, someone who's just going to come there and pop the shit out of someone and keep it moving to the next play. That's what I like about him.
Of course. Yeah. You love your hammerheads. you're all about the hammer. Right. But hey, man, these are the guys like I always had they get kind of in certain defenses though, these guys can work. And if you mention, okay, oh man, maybe he's not iffy in coverage. Guess what these defenses do? Blitz them. Rush down the pipe and you're going to blow up some guard or running back. We don't even worry about you in coverage. So like, again, it's a defense that like masks, you know, maybe a little bit of the weaknesses. I love that. Yeah. Again, another player to throw into this defense. That should be pretty good. Mine, it was hard for me not to talk about him, but it's AJ Barner, tight end. I dig Barner. I liked him as a prospect. He's better as a pro than I was anticipating as a prospect. Truly can play in line and block. This offense also, I think it's kind of been an underrated thing. Maybe it shouldn't actually, but what Shanahan loves to use the tight end and he has Kittle, but this offense used to be tight end friendly. Like I'm picturing Owen Schmidt, you know, with the Texans, like that's what Barner could be as a receiver and a better blocker, which I think is really exciting.
Owen Daniels. But Owen Daniels.
Oh, did I say Owen Schmidt? That's a freaking fullback from West Virginia.
The hard-o West Virginia fullback that I don't like.
He former Seahawk. He actually busted his helmet open or his head open with the helmet.
Such you know, a hard
I got to turn in my Badger helmet. OD is a Badger legend too. Former quarterback converts to tight end. So Owen Daniels, I'm sorry, OD. I've met you before. You're a great guy. Sorry about that. Even though his nickname. AJ Barner, though, because I think he's a true. I've been, I know Arroyo's going to be sexier and a really cool player in his own right, but Barner is a true tight end that could play in line and be a good, solid to good receiver and a nice auxiliary target in this offense. Yeah, I think he's going to surprise some people how effective he'll be. Not just me as a nerd posting clips about him blocking, just the other parts of his game are going to stand out as well. Again, interesting team, man. I could have gone with a few other guys as well, I think, across this team, which, again, I take note of. Over under win total, 8.5 for the Seahawks. Charles, where are you leaning towards?
I'm going over. I think this can be a 10 win team with the defense. I still am a little concerned about some of the juice they have on offense, but this defense should be absolute dynamite, especially if they can stay healthy.
I try to explain it always every show and try to explain kind of my thinking of why I lean towards certain teams. You got what I think could be a top five defense, top six, and you got a run game that I think will be, I'm going to say, easy top half of the league run game and an explosive passing game, because it might not always be consistent with Darnold. They might have some bad matchups, but this offense has the play action plays and the boot plays and the launch plays that can create some explosives. Darnold's willing to rip it. That's the math to me that, that's a team that can win 10 games. Defense, run the ball, explosive passes. So I'm also going over with the Seahawks. But now, and I think this might be the most interesting prediction of any division we've done, maybe the NFC North, but final division prediction for the NFC West, Charles. Who is going to win it in your mind?
Well, if I just follow, I guess, where I went on over unders, I'm going to end up on Seattle. I think the defense can just drag him across. The defense, I think, can drag him across the finish line. If you would ask me a month ago, I would have said the Rams. You've asked me a month ago. But I'm going to go with Seattle. I want to say Arizona, but I think Seattle, just having such a sure thing on one side of the ball just kind of edges me past them.
That's very fair.
I don't really have any questions about where they are. So I'm going to go with Seattle.
Oh, man. Like you just said, if you asked me 3 months ago, we'd have been Cardinals. If you asked me 2 months ago, probably would have been Rams. Asked me a month ago, probably would have been 49ers. I'm going with the Seahawks. That's why I'm shocked you went there too, because I thought I was always the high guy on them. So just what I explained, the math makes sense in my head. To where Stone, our producer, who is a Seahawks fan, is going nuts right now. I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth either, but it just makes sense I just kind of look at the units and everything. And I know Clint Kubiak is not, it's Kubiak's son. He's shown that he can do this. He's shown he's put together some offenses that can work.
I mean,
I'm so high on that off the grub last year. And I was right away, I'm like, ooh, you don't know how to do it. That's scary. I'm with you. And actually probably the team I feel second best is the Cardinals, which again, I'm but I think all four of these teams are valid playoff contenders. That's why I'm so interested to see how this all shakes out. But yeah, going with the Seahawks. I'm actually shocked at both of us right now. But we are closing it out today. That was super fun. Wrapped up the NFC previews. We got the AFC West on Wednesday. Me and Matt will be doing that. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That is Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts. You can find him at Four Verts on social media. Make sure to subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars, pretty please, or watch us on YouTube. Make sure to subscribe and rate us there as well on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thanks to Stone, Madison, and Ingrid behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.